This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now from the Mariner broadcast is Gary Hill. And Gary, how much are you enjoying this season?
Oh, it's so much fun. I mean, it's been amazing. Not only have they exceeded, I think, everyone's expectations. I mean, winning is about as fun as it can get, but also the way they're doing it. I mean, it's incredible. The one-run games, the extra-inning games, the thrilling comebacks. It's a fun team to watch day in and day out, and it's been amazing. I've loved it.
Oh, you got to, because, again, it's like because nobody expected it to come out like this.
No, I mean, I think a lot of us thought they'd be competitive. I didn't think at this point we'd be sitting here after the halfway point, and they've been hovering at 20-plus games above 500, which is pretty incredible. And right now, they have put a ton of pressure on the Angels and the A's, for that matter, because their lead right now is really impressive. You start doing the math on what it would take for the A's or Angels to catch the Mariners, and they have to play great baseball, and the Mariners would have to really start to struggle from here on out. And the way they're playing right now, when you watch them on a daily basis, with the way the rotation has been, the bullpen, the offense, it's hard to imagine that taking place.
Well, and that's where it's just such a fascinating year with the schedule. And again, this is where the schedule increases for the advantage for the Mariners, you know, because, you know, you keep winning against the losing teams. And, you know, this team is now 31-12 against teams with losing records, 21-19, which is very respectable against winning teams.
Yeah.
That's huge.
You're right. There's not many teams that have an above 500 record against 500 teams, and one of them's the Mariners. In fact, the Mariners and Red Sox are kind of mirror images this year. They both just kind of demolished teams below 500, but playing well against teams above 500, and that's been a real key. You mentioned the schedule. At this point, the only thing the Angels and A's can really hang their hats on is at least they'll get lots of cracks at the Mariners the rest of the way, but that's about it. Which is why, you know, this three-game series against the Angels coming up after the Royals series is a massive series, more so for the Angels and the Mariners, but still a big series. If the Mariners are able to take that series, that puts the Angels in even more of a hole moving forward.
Now, honestly, I mean, this may sound bold, but if the Mariners can win 4 out of 6 in those early games, this is before the All-Star break, and the A's struggle because they have a tough schedule, it's all they can almost not clinch things, but all but wrap things up, or have the impression now that things are wrapped up. Because if you look in the over until like about July 22nd, I think the A's have this one series against a team with a losing record. And, you know, I know that what you have is, I think, you know, you got right now the Angels playing Baltimore. So that's their last chance to play a losing team until past the All-Star break. And so there's like about 15 games there where you figure if you go 500, you know, you may salvage things, but you're probably not going to go 500.
Yeah, I mean, they're just in great shape. They have put themselves in such tremendous position. It's such a strange year compared to last year. I mean, it seemed like the entire season there were about 6 teams within a game or two of the wild card race. And this year, the Mariners and, for that matter, the Yankees and Red Sox and Astros have kind of put the rest of the team in the rearview mirror, rest of the teams in the American League. But you're right. I mean, anything can happen in baseball. We've seen monster comebacks in the past, but the Mariners are making it very difficult on the teams right behind them.
Which what I can imagine, and I've been saying this now for a couple of days, if you're Jerry DePoto, again, the strategy kind of fits the DePoto style for what you do in making some trades here to strengthen the team. Because I think what you don't do is it, unless somebody comes to you with an offer you can't refuse. Like if you get a Justin Verlander, I mean, it's like, okay, you take that one. Because now you get a pitcher who bounces back and now is the best ERA in baseball. And so, but so if you get one like that, that you don't have to give up too many prospects, or you don't have to give up your best prospects. But if the if you, they probably need to make one or two Marco Gonzalez or Mike Leake type trades. And if they can do that, because I know DePoto brought this up the other day, is that, you know, there's got to be a little bit of a concern about innings for James Paxton and innings for Marco Gonzalez, you know, because now I think what is Gonzalez is at 100, and that, you know, they may have to not shut him down, but slow him down. But if they can get players under control for several years, that I think could be the key in, you know, trying to, you know, make the team even stronger for this year and next year.
Yeah, and we've seen that. That's what Jerry DePoto prefers to do. In fact, we saw it with the Colomay deal. He's under team control for a couple of years, and it's so valuable when you can get that team control, have a guy that can help you not only now, but moving forward as well. And we've seen, I mean, you mentioned the Gonzalez trade and the Leake trade, trades that were made last year, but paying huge dividends for this team this year. I always think that's the way he would like to go. Man, it's hard when you look at the landscape. It's hard to make guesses about who exactly he's targeting, because I feel like we never really know. And there's always names that D. Gordon's a great example. I don't think D. Gordon was on anyone's radar, yet he ends up in a Mariners uniform. I'm very anxious to see what happens around the trade deadline. I wouldn't be surprised if they brought in a starting pitcher. And again, not to replace anyone in the rotation, but really to augment the rotation and maybe add, maybe go six for a while, maybe skip a guy here or there just because you can. And that, we've talked about the big lead they've put together. That could be the luxury for the Mariners here the rest of the way, although still chasing the division. Obviously a chance to get the West for sure. I'd love to see them hang around a game or two or three or four and then strike in September, see if they can get the division. It's going to be tough. Houston is really good, but if they can hang around and see what happens. I also think for Mariners fans, watching the East the rest of the way is going to be key. Watch the Red Sox, watch the Yankees, and hope they are close the rest of the way, because those two teams end with each other. And I think it would be a big advantage if the Yankees and Red Sox, because both teams will want the division. Both teams, they want to stay out of the one-game playoff. If those teams battle down the stretch, who knows? Maybe Sale gets burned in the last series of the season. Maybe Severino gets burned in the last series of the season where they wouldn't be available for a one-game playoff. That's something to watch, too, for Mariners fans here down the stretch. Hopefully the Yankees and Red Sox stay close.
Oh, no question. But it's still just kind of fun to watch the way this thing has all come together, because what it is, they're taking advantage of a gift, and it's a gift that can end 17 years of a drought that has been very painful for the city.
No doubt. And years like this are so much fun, too. Kind of a surprise year where it's just the way they've played has been so much fun and so remarkable in so many different ways. I mean, if I would have told you at this point, John, that we would be over the halfway point and the Mariners starting rotation has thrown the third most innings in Major League Baseball this season. I mean, behind the Astros and the Indians, I find that to be incredible. I mean, we talked about the starting rotation coming into the season, and the way they've performed has been so impressive. And I think not only the rotation itself gets the credit for that, I think the defense gets a lot of credit for that too, and probably something we don't talk about enough. Haniger has been, if not the best right fielder defensively in baseball, surely one of the best. Seager probably having his best year at third base defensively. Segura's been plus. Gordon, Zunino, they've been plus defenders. Heredia as well. They've been so good defensively, and I think that's been a huge key to what they've done this year.
Oh, no question. And it's just been fun to watch. Now, how important was it for Marco Gonzalez to have a game like this? A complete game and only giving up one run.
That was awesome. He has been so good. And one of the surprise guys, one of the guys that has really been the backbone to what the Mariners have done this year. He was so close to the shutout, just one out away, which would have been awesome, but still his first ever complete game. He is just pitching with so much confidence this year. And it was fun to talk to Ryan Roland Smith on the postgame show last night, who just had a great breakdown of what Marco Gonzalez is doing right now, and he's just really mixing his pitches well. He's just getting ahead of hitters constantly. He's got one of the top first pitch strike percentages in baseball. He's just working ahead. He's working with confidence, totally efficient. It's just been so much fun to watch. And it's something that I think we forget. He has started more games this year than he has his entire major league career coming into this year. In terms of, you know, major league stuff and how much time he spent in the big leagues, he really hasn't spent a lot of time in the big leagues. So it's a young pitcher going to work, and he's been fabulous. It has been fun to watch. And last night was awesome.
Yeah, no question. And so now it's trying to see how Felix continues to improve, which, of course, 4 out of 5 starts. He's been on it.
Yeah, he's been really good. I think he has a chance to have a good night tonight, too. The Royals, a team that has struggled offensively, they're aggressive, too. And I think that's always the key for me. If Felix can stay away from the walks, he's usually really good. I mean, we've talked about his secondary stuff, his curveball, his changeup. Opponents are still having a really tough time squaring that up. So if he can stay away from the walks, he should be in good shape. I think this matchup really works for him. And the Mariners, a chance to continue the win streak, a chance to take another series. And hey, you look at it now, what, 17-4 in their last 21 at home? They are playing some great baseball overall, but especially at home, which mm-hmm. is fantastic.
Yeah. And yeah, it just continues. And so now it's kind of the big race. How do you look at what's going on with the A's and what's going on with the Angels? Because, you can see what the schedule is coming up for both teams. And you watched it with the Mariners. They went through the tough schedule. You even watched it with Houston when the Astros were going through that Yankee-Boston gauntlet. Yeah. They opened the door for at least a temporary time for the Mariners to take over first place.
You know, I like the A's. I think they have a nice core offensively. Position player-wise, I think they're in good shape. I think that's for real. In fact, you look at their numbers outside of Oakland for whatever reason, and they're one of the best offenses in baseball. For whatever reason, they've really struggled at home, especially hitting home runs, but they haven't on the road. But I think position player-wise, they're in great shape. They have one of the nastiest closers in the game. Maybe everyone doesn't quite realize it, but Blake Treinen is outstanding. I think the questions for the A's and what will be tough on them to try and make a run at the Mariners is their rotation. It's really put together at this point with Band-Aids and bubblegum. They had some questions coming into the season, but injuries have taken even more of a toll. I think long-term they'll struggle with that, although I think they have a real shot to finish above 500 the rest of the way. Schedule may make that more difficult, but I think they have a shot at least. I think the Angels are just really beat up. I had some questions about them anyways, but you look at what they've gone through, some of the injuries, some guys spent on the DL. Their lineup, you get past the top is great with Trout and Simmons there having an all-star type season. They have some questions at the bottom, especially without Ohtani, but it looks like he may be coming back in the short term, at least offensively. I think they have bullpen questions as well. I have a hard time believing that they're going to be able to make a run at the Mariners, just the makeup of their club and some of the holes I see right now.
No, I agree. And again, what's likely is, I don't think they'll fall below 500, but I think they're going to drift closer to 500 once they get to the All-Star break because of that schedule. And my prediction would be then, obviously the Angels have everything on the line in the 6 games that they play before the All-Star break and 9 in the month of July. Because if they can't, make up some ground, they're done.
No, I know. The pressure is really on, especially in this 3-game series coming up because, I mean, do the Mariners take 2 of 3? I mean, the Angels are in a monster hole. I mean, they already are, really. But those are the games that the Angels are really counting on, especially the head-to-head, because when you get a win against the Mariners head-to-head, you get a full game. So that's what they're hanging their hats on the rest of the way. They've got to take care of business against the Mariners the rest of the way. And every time the Mariners beat the Angels, it's a huge win for the Mariners and devastating for the Angels.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no question about it. So what's it look like right now as far as how Kyle Seager is going to fight through that foot injury?
He's a tough guy. I mean, it's something that I think can get overlooked, but he is truly one of the Iron Men in Major League Baseball right now. He is a guy that he's in there game in and game out, and he has been his entire Mariners career. In fact, I think he's taken more criticism this year than deserved. I think he's having a really nice season. You look at him defensively, I think he's playing better defensively than his Gold Glove season. He may not win the Gold Glove this year because Chapman with Oakland is phenomenal at third base and having kind of an out-of-world experience at third base this season. But Seager has played so good defensively and has been such a key. You look at the production, he's leading the team in extra base hits. He's driving in runs. I mean, batting average is really the only thing that we're looking at. And you look at how often he's shifted compared to just a couple of years ago. I think 2 years ago he was shifted 30% of the time, and now it's climbing near 80%. So I don't know if we're going to see that average live where it has in the past, but production-wise, he's been right there. He's playing every day. He plays beat up. There's a lot to love about Kyle Seager, and he's been a huge part to what they've done this year. And I think he's just going to continue to play through it.
That sounds good. Gary will be listening tonight and tomorrow. And, of course, big series coming up against the Angels. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, anytime, John. Great to talk to you, as always.
Gary Hill. And, of course, we'll come back, take your phone calls, load up the phone calls. We'll go to the top of the hour. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Matt, who do we have on the line? Let's go to Russ in Linwood. Hey, Russ.
Hey, JC. How you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Fine. What's going on in Chi-Town?
It's kind of interesting because I think a lot of people are now just trying to, forecast on defense where they are, and I think that they really feel good about their improvement on the linebacking core.
Mm-hmm.
They were able to draft one of the best linebackers, Ron Smith, and I think they're positive about him. They certainly want Floyd to really step up and start getting more sacks, but I mean, that's one of the strengths of the team right now, in the sense that, what, as bad as they were last year, at least they were top 10 on defense.
Uh-huh.
And they think they're going to be a little bit better. Still, I think there's some questions about the pass rush, and that could put a lot of pressure on the secondary. So I think, the big evaluating thing going on right now is looking at the pass rush and, what they need to do to get that better.
Well, who are the pass rushers?
That's a good question. I mean, do they really have that playmaking pass rusher that can do it? And I don't know the answer to that one. That's why they need Leonard Floyd and the linebackers to be able to be better. Now, Akeem Hicks is, a good inside pass rusher, is a good defensive tackle. I think they feel good about him. But, they play that 3-4 defense, and so the ends don't get as involved as much, getting to the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they need to scheme things up and get them things done that way.
Okay, one more thing. Were they affected by the supplemental draft?
I don't know if they are, because, the moves that I did not like. I mean, I still think they made a major, major mistake, when they let their best wide receiver go.
Yeah.
Because that I think hurt them. And then I still think they made a major mistake with Fuller, because when they gave him when they put him out there as a transition player, and then Green Bay took his price up to $14 million,
mm-hmm.
I thought that was way too much.
Yeah.
Didn't like those moves at all.
Okay, JC, nice talking with you.
Hey, Russ, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Loading up the phone calls. Yeah, it's kind of interesting, because I thought that Tony Romo made some interesting points this week, because everybody seems to be sleeping on the Green Bay Packers. And so he thinks the Packers might be the NFC Super Bowl team. A lot of that has to do, and again, that's a team that you still wonder about the pass rush. And I know Clay Matthews went out, and he even questioned the pass rush, because he doesn't know exactly what they have to be able to get a good pressure on the quarterback. So that is a problem and an issue. But I think that you can see they get Aaron Rodgers back, and his return is maybe the second best quarterback in the league, is only going to make them a playoff team. That's going to be hard for them not to make the playoffs if Aaron Rodgers is out there. So that will be kind of fun to watch as far as that team. And you know how good Minnesota is. And I still think that the Neil Hunter deal was spot on, because $14 million, again, it wasn't the $17 million that that DeMarcus Lawrence is going to get from the same draft. And he's already got $17 million in the bank right now as a franchise player. So we'll get that. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. And, of course, back to the Mariners. Oh, let's go to Paul in Kent. Hey, Paul.
Hey, John. Thanks for taking my call. Thank you.
I wanted to get your opinion on J.R. Sweezy and what you think his future is, if the Hawks will have any interest of bringing it back in.
See, I don't think they do. And, you know, let's put it this way. It depends on price. If he's willing to come back and play for the minimum and take the gamble on himself, then I think you do it. I think more than likely he probably could end up as a backup at the Oakland Raiders because he'll get together with Tom Cable. And see, here's the reason I think that, not that they would shy away from him. I mean, obviously, if you get a gift as a starting guard in a position that you want to make as competitive as possible, you take it. But he doesn't fit the style of what they want at guard right now. And that's where the dramatic change is, you know, because they want big at guard. I mean, Ethan Posick, who is, you know, he was 302 last year. Now he's 322. You know, they pick up DJ Fluker, you know, and he's 343. So that's taking the average offensive lineman to 323.8. Well, unfortunately, Sweezy's 295. And so at the moment, he doesn't fit. And what, you know, Mike Solari wants and Brian Schottenheimer wants is they want more physical type of offensive lineman as opposed to athletic offensive lineman. And so, you know, if they can get him at a cheap price, yeah, but I don't think they're going to, you know, necessarily be aggressive in trying to, you know, give him a contract that might be worth $1.5 million or two.
All right, good stuff. Thanks, John.
Hey, thank you, Paul. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. The you know, of course, that's the, you know, interesting part about the Seahawks right now. They not only have they changed coaches, but in some ways on offense, they've changed philosophy. You know, you can see that they're going to pass the ball more to running backs. You can see that they're going to make a commitment to run the ball more, something that they got away from because of the bad blocking of the offensive line. Key, obviously, is going to be the offensive line on offense, trying to make sure that they can go ahead and get some real good blocking and get that going. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Load up those phone lines. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Dan in Seattle. Hey, Dan.
Hi, John. Great show.
Thank you.
You know, that point you make about them trying to change their offense is really, I think it's really, really primary right now for them. You know, I was looking back at 2012, and they had 9 wins back then where they had more rushing yards than passing yards.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to believe that they had 11 wins total with an offense like that, but they did. And with so many of the defenses, you know, set up to be pass-oriented defenses, it's potentially a weakness for a lot of these defenses to have to defend a really power running team. So I think Pete's always kind of had that strategy. So I like your take on it. You know, I have a question about the sport of football in general. In 2 years, we have the collective bargaining agreement being renegotiated. And the NFL has, in prioritizing safety, begun to legislate out some of the more dangerous plays, including kickoffs. With the level of people that are saying, we really don't want to see kickoffs go away, we think they're a really important part of the game, and the fact that we have two, not one, but two new football leagues, or one being resurrected, that will be playing by 2020, is there a possibility with a walkout by the NFL players that those one or two football leagues really gain a foothold with the general football fan base?
No, I don't see it. I mean, first off, the Alliance for American Football is really working behind the scenes to convince the NFL to get their endorsement, because what you see is that they're paying $750,000 for coaches who have been in this league. They're paying $250,000 for general managers who have been in this league, and they want to develop as a developmental league. They're only going to be out there for 3 months, and they won't have they won't have the resources to be able to take over a $14 billion business. So no, that's not going to be the case. And by the time the collective bargaining agreement, it's going to be about an $18 billion business, maybe $19 billion. So that's not going to be the case. And yeah, where you know there's going to be a likely a labor problem, you know, are the players still, like they were the last time, you know, not willing to give up the salaries and everything else and the benefits with really limited chance of being able to gain things back. It's going to be a fight, you know that, but no, I don't envision that at all. I mean, you can't compete on that level because there's just way too much now to be able to make up for. I mean, what, was it $500 million or something like that that Vince McMahon's putting up there, $500 million? That's not $18 billion. I just don't see it. Dan, thank you for the phone call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Chris in Everett. Hey, Chris.
Hey, John, I haven't talked to you for a while.
I know. Where you been?
Chris. Hey, man. Yeah. Hey, I'm trying to get the phone number. You know, I'm trying to call you. I'm like, man, I didn't talk to John. I haven't talked to him for a while.
I know.
I love your show, John. I really do.
Ah, thank you.
I just enjoy it. Danny DeVore, they cracked me up, dude. They just cracked me up. So, anyways, I'm looking for the 2000. I just wrote some stuff, some questions for you, John. Like a month ago, I'm not sure which month, what you and Dave were talking about the Rams or something like that. Mm-hmm. I like to see the Rams. Okay, number one, I'm a huge Seahawks fan. I know we're not going to the Super Bowl in 2019. My predictions, what's your predictions, John, about this Ram? I know you told like a month ago or 2 months ago something about the Rams would be much tougher this year. Their defense and their offense, they have a good offense, like you said. And I've been hearing like there's a lot of good players who they sign. So I'm thinking my predictions for the Super Bowl, you could say your opinion, it's fine, John. I love your show. I love what you say on the show, on the radio live. So anyways, the Rams, I will pick the Rams and the Patriots in the Super Bowl of 2019.
It's possible, yeah. I guess what it still comes down to, can you be a believer in Jared Goff winning playoff games? And winning playoff games in a conference that has so many good ones. In other words, can he beat a Cam Newton? You know, can he beat a Drew Brees? You know, can he beat an Aaron Rodgers? You know, those are going to be the big questions. And that's why I put a question mark on them being a Super Bowl team. You know, I think with you look at the makeup of their team, I don't know if they can repeat the 30 points a game that they scored, 29.9 points that they scored last year, but you know they're going to be better on defense because they added Ndamukong Suh, they added Marcus Peters, and they added Aqib Talib. So they're probably going to be giving up maybe, you know, 20 points or less on, then that probably puts them in the 11-12 win category. It probably gives them a very high seed, and with a home game, maybe they have a chance, two home games or so, maybe they have a chance to sneak in. But I still go, it's a quarterback-driven league, and ultimately the better quarterback with a better team is going to be able to win. There's no question that they're right in the mix with all these other top teams in the conference, whether it's Carolina, New Orleans, depending on what team you believe in. Carolina, New Orleans, Minnesota, Green Bay, Philadelphia, they're all in that top echelon. You know, Seattle's just a little tick behind right now because I don't put them in that top group. I put them as a wild card playoff contender. But it still comes down to, you know, minimizing the number of games you play in the playoffs. And then, you know, because I'll throw this right back at you. Do you see Jared Goff beating Aaron Rodgers or Matt Stafford or, you know, maybe he can beat a Kirk Cousins, but is he going to get two wins against top quarterbacks?
That's really tough. I don't know. That's a good question, what you're throwing there, out there in the mix there. Good question. Maybe not. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
So my second question is about the Seahawks. I agree with what you're saying. You've been doing this since 1972, if I'm not mistaken, right?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, so the Seattle Seahawks with the 2018 draft, I saw this. I was online yesterday. Okay, you got Carson and you got the they could be so dominant. I read this yesterday online after work. It was Penny and Carson. Mm-hmm. Those companies could be doggone dominant. What do you think about the rookie running back? I know who can make the team. I know he's going to make the team, and it'll be a rookie, and he might be a starter, like you said a few months ago about that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Carson starting, but there's no question they're going to develop Penny, and they're going to be committing to run the ball. And here, if you look at the dynamics of things, because you know the numbers were so bad last year rushing, because Russell Wilson was the second best rushing quarterback in the league and had a game like about 348 of the yards, and they were only able to get like 101 yards or so running the football. So what they need is, and you look at if you can improve a running game And what you would have to think is that, I don't know if it's going to be as dramatic as, say, New Orleans, but I think that you can see with the combination of the two, because both can catch the football, and if they keep C.J. Procise and J.D. McKissick, there's four guys that can catch the football out of the backfield. But if you can, you know, manage, because what the Saints were able to do was take their rushing totals up to 2,000 yards, right? And or 2,000 yards rushing, and that took a team that had a plus 34, so and I'm just going off memory right here, a plus 44 point differential to about 120, and that takes you into the 11-win category. And I would have to think that maybe it won't be as dramatic, but it's not going to be as bad as last year. I mean, this team for point differential was really, you know, like, plus 34 or something like that. And plus, it's very, very low number. But I would have to think if they can get, you know, 1,200, 1,300, maybe even 1,400 yards out of the running backs, then they have a great chance to get that plus 100 point differential. And if they can get that, that puts them, you know, 9, 10, 11 wins.
Okay.
So, yeah. So another, because you know, like, all you have to do is look at the improvement. Because again, people minimize the value of running backs. Now again, it's a quarterback-driven league. That's not changing. But you know, Leonard Fournette goes to the Jaguars. What, they won 11 games. Ezekiel Elliott makes a rookie debut for Dallas. They were a team with minus point differentials the year before. They go up over 100, and they win, what, 12 games. You saw it with what the Rams were able to do with Todd Gurley. So the Chiefs go to the playoffs with Kareem Hunt. And so if you can add the running game, and again, it's not just one back, because you look at Kamara and Mark Ingram, you know, they did that in the Saints, and all of a sudden, those 7-9 seasons turned into 10-11 wins. Hey, thank you for the phone call, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Our thanks for Matt Nelson for producing the show and running the show, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Commando Dave. David, how are you today?
Hey, I'm doing great. What's up, John Clayton?
Doing good.
Good, man. Hey, I'm going to start by giving a shout-out to Benny Beaver, Mr. Brother. Hope you're still kicking or splashing. And congratulations to your Oregon State baseball team for winning the College World Series. The last thing I remember that impressive was beating Seattle U 99-48 in hoop. And, John Clayton, while I'm giving shout-outs to Sports Radio Hall of Famers, to quote my man Carl Johnson, tomorrow is Irish Minky Day at Emerald Downs with the $50,000 Irish Minky Day Stakes. The funny thing about it, John Clayton, they left off the Minky part on all of the official promo stuff at EmeraldDowns.com.
I know. It's like that. I guess what it comes up. See, well, you know why it didn't happen? Notre Dame's not in a conference. If Notre Dame was in a conference, I think they would have an Irish Minky Day with Irish Minky there.
There you have it. That's a good one. And speaking of the first day of July, John Clayton, let me give a shout-out to all of the dedicated athletes in town for the Special Olympics. Welcome to Seattle, and thank you to the Special Olympics Committee for bringing an event to the Emerald City that puts it on a sports map in a whole new way. And here's a trivia question for you, John Clayton, more like a trivia question for the listeners, since you probably know the answer. Name the Special Olympics' most recognized NFL player.
Okay, I know the answer to that. That would be what, Isaiah Pede, right?
Huh?
Isaiah Pede?
No, Jamal Charles.
Oh, Jamal Charles, okay.
Yeah, competed in the Special Olympics when he was 10 years old.
I did not know that.
Years ago, man, gave a great speech at the Special Olympics where he said, "The Special Olympics gave me my first chance to discover the talent I did not know I had." And if you haven't seen that video, it's on johnclaytondanit.com. Thanks to the Sports Bar Network, just click the banner. And the other thing you'll see on the website, John Clayton, is a photo of you in a Mariners jersey tossing the ball in the air like you're ready to come out of the bullpen.
Mm-hmm. I kind of have that Wade LeBlanc type delivery, I think, although I'm a right-hander as opposed to a left-hander.
There you go. Jamal Charles is an unrestricted free agent, right?
Yes, he's been unsigned. I know that the Saints looked at him but didn't sign him.
Huh.
They opted to go with Terrence West.
Where you see Jamal Charles landing?
You have to tell me what injury happens in camp that opens up an opportunity, because right now he's on the outside looking in. know, if somebody, if a running back gets suspended, then he'll be on the call list. And so, I mean, he'll find something, but it won't be easy. Same thing for Adrian Peterson.
Well, and John Clayton, I hope you don't mind. I have a parliamentary point of clarification on your conversation with John Boyle.
Yeah.
As far as holders go, the fateful play you mentioned had more to do with the power of the 12th man and big play Jordan Babineau making a big play at a big time in a big game than Tony Fumble Fingers Romo. However, the point of the importance of the holder that you made was well taken.
Yeah, but of course, I was on the field for that play, and I think really the blame should go to Bill Parcells, because here's Romo, who was, you know, for until 14 seconds left, thinking he was going to be a quarterback, and the next thing you know, they send the kicking unit in late, and now he has to make the adjustment of thinking no play and doing that. I put it on Bill Parcells. Hey, thank you so much, Commando Dave. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor.
Hey, John, another great show.
Oh, thank you.
No Bronco question this week, but I have one question, one statement.
Oh, by the way, I'm on four times this week.
Four times, same show?
Yes.
All right.
I think it was going to be on 4th of July, be an hour earlier.
Okay, good deal. Then the one statement is, I'm so excited, John, about your fantasy camp this year. I bought extra notepads, and I know the MFL will be represented there, John. So what day is it?
We don't have it.
Oh.
I know.
That's
whoever sold you the ticket, you might want to say you got ripped off.
That's on American, John. You take care, bud. Have a good
week.
Okay,
Victor, thank you. Let's finish it up with Wheat in Tacoma. Hey, Wheat.
Yeah, what's going on, John? Just a little heartbreak hotel. I know. Hey, that was pretty cool about that guy talking about Special Olympics. Wow, man, that was just too cool, man. Hey, John, I just want to say hello to the UW Women Heartbreak Hotel. Man, I wish they had won a national championship, man, because you start everything out and you got one goal, man, championships. And that's all I care about, man. The women, dang it, man. And then of course, the baseball team, the men's baseball team, doggone it, they were there in Omaha. That was something else, John.
Mm-hmm. No, that was great. I mean, it was just fun to watch. And, and again, both for the men and the accomplishment of the men and the women's softball team, something that hadn't been done before. It's been just a great year for Washington sports.
Boy, you know, that's a perfect word, John, accomplishment. I know, because, darn it, just right there, I was thinking about them the past, I don't know, have a couple weeks or whatever, but you, just on a side note, John, I don't know, I know a lot of people can't watch everything, but I did see that woman pitch for Florida State University. She's a lefty, and I watched her before she played UW, and I was watching her pitch, and I was like, how can anyone hit this girl?
Right.
I watched. The ball was in the catcher's mitt. It was like within a blink, and I was going way before she pitched against UW. But at any rate, so I just thinking about Seahawks Fan Fest coming up here in a couple of months. For me, I can never get into training camp, John. It sells
it's
out
tough,
like in a split second.
I got to run here because we just kind of run out of time, but. Thank you so much for the phone call, and thank you, everybody. I'll be back on 10 on Monday, and I'll also be back on Saturday at 9. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.